We'll look at the tape.
Hogan Johns.
I think we got to come out hard and stay hard.
Part of Chicago's best Bears coverage.
I don't know.
Now, here they are.
They're day-to-day in my mind.
WGN Radio's very own Adam Hogue.
I'm violent.
And the Chicago Sun-Times' Adam Johns.
What an a-hole.
Hug it, chug it, football!
What's up? What's going on? Adam Hogue, Adam Johns here with you. Episode 130 of the podcast. How about that? 130.
Kind of like a milestone. Not like 100 or 150. 130.
150. We'll throw a huge party.
Yes.
How about
that?
We talked about doing that for the 100th episode.
But somebody went to Ireland.
And then, yeah, someone wasn't there for the 100th episode.
I was partying. I was celebrating.
Yeah, you did celebrate in Ireland, just without me. By the way, we are, I should share this with you. We are working on a live show for the end of the season. Before the end of the season. Early stages, we're trying to work it out, but we know that's something we've talked to you about. But be on the lookout for that, because we would like to get that done before the season's over and kind of absolutely reward our listeners that are interested in doing that. So just keep...
Let's pick a place with good food.
Yeah.
Because I want free food.
You just want want free food?
Yes. Okay. I'm looking at, someone shared something on Twitter. I'm looking at a burger and fries.
Oh,
right,
so you're hungry right now.
Yes, I am hungry. I am actually hungry.
You shouldn't go on the radio hungry. Technically, you're not on the radio.
I'll be crabby. I'm a little crabby.
Because I always get hungry when I'm on the air, and it does. You get angry. And there's things to get angry about today on this podcast if we're not careful. At Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S, our producer's Joe Romano. You can follow him at Joey Joe Rowe. Read us, WGNradio.com/Bears. My 10 Bears things are up right now, and I looked at 10 specific problems with the Bears offense, and we're going to get into
just
a lot of that.
Just 10?
Yeah, well, I only do 10 things. It could have gone on and on.
10A, 10B, 10C.
Someone else,
10Z.
Someone else does that. 10G, 10H, P. ChicagoSunTimes.com is where you can read. John Z, what did you write about today?
Too many negative runs.
Yes.
Doesn't help the old rookie quarterback.
No. That was one of
Stop running the ball.
One of my 10
backwards.
But as you bring up, you can write like a whole thing on each one of these problems.
Yes, yes, because that's a multi-layered problem too.
Exactly.
They're having that so many negative runs. But
You can search Hogan Johns on iTunes. Please rate and review the podcast there. It helps spread the word. We appreciate you doing that. The podcast is also available on TuneIn and the WGN Radio app, pretty much anywhere you listen to your podcasts. Our voicemail line is 312-222-5050, and as you can imagine, that was on fire on Sunday during that debacle. We had a few days to digest this, and we will get into everything that's kind of gone on in house hall the last couple days, because I think it's a head coach and an offense coordinator that doesn't really have answers right now. But you guys didn't really digest this before you left all your voicemails Sunday, and that's why they're so good. So let's get to those right now that Joe Romano put together, your voicemails from the Bears' ugly loss to the Brett Hundley-led Packers on Sunday.
Hello?
Do you know who this is?
Oh, you didn't know? Your ass better call somebody!
The Hogan Johns voicemail.
The Hogan Johns voicemail line.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
Got any questions or comments about the Bears? Give the guys a call before, after, or even during the game. 312-222-5050.
Go Bears!
Hoagie, John Z. Babe, Bob Dabrowski here calling from the North Lot, walking into Soldier Field right now. We got the Bears Packers going on, and everybody's drinking a screwdriver or what you got, and everybody's having high fives, and everybody's happy, and it's going to be a Bears W. We got Mitchie, high five there, yeah. We got a big W. Mitchie's going to open it up. He's just getting started. Let's go, Bears. All right, let's go.
Steve from New Jersey. I don't understand. They said Cunningham was out of bounds, and then they say it's a fumble, but if he was out of bounds, then how did he fumble it into the end zone? I don't get it.
Andre Kennedy, Okinawa, Japan. 3 a.m. out here, and I got to be up for work in a few hours. And I get the privilege of watching the most unprepared team coming out of the bye in NFL history. Penalties on top of penalties, and arguably the challenge of the year by Foxy. So, yeah, way to go, Foxy. Way to have the boys ready to play.
Gail, Copperopolis, California. I can't believe that the Bears are going to maintain Fox after that crappy challenge when anybody up in the booth should have been able to tell him, don't challenge us, don't challenge us. But they didn't. That, and guess what? I bet you we're going to run on first down.
Joe from the Bronx calling from Soldier Field for the first time. I did not come here to see the refs lose us the game. This is terrible on their part. Let's hope they turn it around in the second half.
Sean in Arizona, can somebody please explain to me why Bellamy is on the field more than Wright and Inman and Wheaton combined? It literally makes no sense why Bellamy is taking as many snaps as he is, because he is garbage. The other receivers aren't necessarily any better than garbage, but they're still a little bit better than the fiery, disgusting, smelly garbage that Bellamy is.
Ben from Fort Collins, Colorado here. I mean, if this is the offense we're trying to run, I might as well be the coordinator. I mean, is it John Fox? Is it the head coach? I really don't know, but it's run, pass. And they've been stopping the run, and we refuse to throw the ball on first down, and it's, I don't know, it's time for a change, boys.
Big Easy from Brooklyn. I don't know what these dudes keep trying to pass the ball to Josh Bellamy. The dude has proven that he can't catch for shit. Let's keep it funky. He can't catch. Dude's got rubber hands. Anything that hits it repels. And I'm just saying, John Fox needs to let Dow Logan take the reins of the offense. Stop coordinating offense, because, bro, you're garbage. You're trash.
This is Alex from Florida. How do we let this happen every year? Some third down, fourth down, long play against the Packers. We just give it up every freaking year. I don't understand it. Fox needs to go. This was a bye week. We had all this time to prepare. Everybody needs to go. I'm sick of it. I know the fans are sick of it. F*** the Packers. Go Bears.
Hey, guys. Matt in California calling here. Just got to say, F*** the Bears. Fox, this team. It's always one step forward, two steps back. They can do nothing right. I don't know what it's going to take. Always a run pass. The defense, who's been dominant for an entire month, comes out and f***ing shits the bed. I want answers, okay?
Daniel from Big Red Country, Omaha, Nebraska. I think the best thing that could happen right now is something that's going to come out of ESPN, hearing that up to 100 employees are going to be laid off. My fingers are crossed. One of them is John Gruden. And that man finds himself at the helm of the Chicago Bears next year, teaching good old 10 God Mitchell Trubisky how to fit it in the turkey hole.
Jim from California. F*** the Packers and f*** John Fox. I'm not surprised at all why this guy lost two f***ing Super Bowls. Sick of this shit. Get him out of here now. Bear down.
Joe from Chicago. I'm just calling about this Packers lost. I mean, John Fox, seriously, the Packers handed this game to them on a silver platter with Brett Hundley playing and the defense playing like hell. I mean, come on. Like, this is the one team in Chicago that you have to beat at least once a year to make us all happy, and he wasted it. He wasted it when Aaron Rodgers is down and this is our best time to attack them. And no, he freaking wasted it.
D from Dallas at Just a Bear Fan on Twitter. Now that I'm calm, I can really say that Dontrell Inman was a pleasant surprise. I know he had that late game drop, which is unacceptable for an NFL receiver. However, before that, he was catching everything, man. He was consistently getting open. I think Dontrell Inman has a spot on his roster, man, for the next year or so, especially if he can develop some nice chemistry with Mitch.
Brandon, I'm calling all the way from Kosovo. It's a little country in Eastern Europe. Currently on deployment. I stay up all night to watch the Bears games. I've done that this entire season, and this is what they give me. I think the most telling stat is the fact that not with the play calling is in five starts, Mitch has been allowed to attempt 34 passes on first down. Whereas in four starts, Mike Glennon attempted 48. 48. Let Mitch throw. Let's pull a Goff and go to the Super Bowl next year. Bear down.
Hey, this is John Fox from the sideline of the Bears, Soldier Field. I got y'all.
Jacob from California. First of all, I need to calm down so I can concentrate on what I need to say. Also, is this 8675309? Is that this track?
It is.
Nice to hear from Fox himself.
That was funny. Man, a lot of people upset. I get it. You know, the fans, especially I would say the people that listen to this podcast, they're not dumb. They see all these things that everyone else has seen. And like the caller just brought up how many times Glennon threw the ball. You know what I mean? Like, part of that's because you were behind, but it's crazy. How about I continue to be amazed, though, by the places from which we're getting voicemails. It's very cool.
Japan.
Okinawa.
It's awesome.
And Kosovo. But how about that? For a Veterans Day weekend, we got a call from someone on deployment from Kosovo.
That is very cool.
So we thank you for your service. Yeah, that's absolutely an awesome call that we're getting that in the middle. And pretty cool that you stay up all night to watch the Bears. It shows you how devoted these people are. And the frustration from that standpoint is totally understandable.
You can't – teams can't let fan frustration influence their decisions, but the Fox fatigue – and it's been a phrase used before by other radio stations and other shows and other writers. It's real.
Yeah.
He rubs people the wrong way in the fan base.
You know, I was thinking about this the other day because I would say the last couple days are really the first time – well, going back to Sunday. This Sunday through, now it's Thursday. This week, it's the first time that in the 3 years under John Fox that it started to sort of slip into Mark Trestman territory where when you listen to these guys, it's like up is down, left is right. Like things just aren't adding up. Okay, now I'm not saying it's...
Oh, their comments themselves.
Right, right. Okay, I'm not saying that it's to that level of ineptitude.
Well, Mark Trestman used to deliver these long statements. Fox does not... Okay, go on.
Right, well, in the past, it's like these guys would just be avoiding the questions. What startled me, and we're about to get into all this, but specifically yesterday at House Hall, it felt like John Fox and Dow Loggins were actually trying to give actual thoughtful reasons for why they're doing what they're doing on offense. But none of it added up. So that's what I talk about where, like, Mark Trestman was actually very respectful to the media and tried to get... He would even, like, on days, he would, like, make comments where he'd be like, oh, I'm trying to give you something here. Like, he was trying to help the media.
Or he would introduce himself or start his press conference off just to give you a little content
Just to give you a little content.
And he would go on, a dissertation.
I mean, remember, he's... And I always respected him for this. One of the biggest boneheaded moves that Mark Trestman made was when he kicked the 47-yard field goal on second down in Minnesota. Okay? And that was really probably the end for him. Right? Maybe this...
Was that Minneapolis and Minnesota?
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe the challenge will end up being like kind of that defining moment for John Fox.
I like the comparison.
But for Mark Trestman, like, that's always what I think about. Like, when you kick the ball from 47 yards on... Like, if it was an extra point, I get it.
Yeah.
But it's second down.
Yes.
I get it on third down. You want to give yourself an extra down in case something goes wrong, but...
Second down.
So, anyway. But the next day, he showed up at House Hall, and he tried to give, like, a really thoughtful answer that I appreciated him doing it. Like, he gave us the actual reasoning for why he did that. It still didn't make sense.
Yes.
But I still disagreed with the logic, but at least he so what I'm saying is, and we're going to get into this right now, that's what happened yesterday at House Hall, at least I felt, with both John Fox and Dow Loggins, for their reasoning for not playing Tariq Cohen, for what they're doing on offense, and we're going to dissect it. Real quick on the voicemails, I want to give a shout-out to Dion Miller from ABC. She is one of our most loyal listeners. And she stopped me yesterday, and she's like, I love the voicemails. I love how you guys get calls from everywhere. And we love it, too. So we appreciate you doing that.
Thank you, Dion.
And Dion is one of our most loyal listeners. So quick shout-out to her. All right. So yesterday, a lot of this was about Tariq Cohen. It went into a lot of different directions. But we're going to kind of focus on the Cohen aspect because, to me, it's a big part of the problems and really just the non-answers that these guys have right now with what they're planning. So this starts with John Fox just being asked about Cohen's usage. For those that don't know, he played 13 of 60 snaps. 13 of 60 snaps on Sunday and only touched the ball twice. Here's John Fox.
You know, I think if you look at, you know, again, you're looking at one game, sometimes the defense dictates, you know, who gets the ball. You know, I think in a running standpoint, it was a game where we didn't run the ball very effectively. I think we only ran it 17 times. I believe Jordan Howard, being the fifth leading rusher in the league, probably commanded most of that. I think he had 15 carries. So it's obviously a situation where we'd like to get him more touches, but it just didn't materialize that well on that day. But I'd remind people he's, you know, pretty high up there in both punt returns. He's our leading receiver with 29 catches, so it's not like we don't know who he is.
All right, we're going to stop it right there. John Fox made mention of this a couple times yesterday, that basically accusing us of focusing on just one game. This is not one game.
It is not.
I put Tariq Cohen's snap counts in my 10 Bears Things column, which, again, you can find on WGNRadio.com. But since week one, he played 42% of the snaps. Week two, he played 62% of the snaps. That was when he was really getting more usage. Week three, the Bears beat the Steelers. He played 43% of the snaps. That's the last time he really played a large portion of the game. So going back to week four in Green Bay, 26%. Vikings, 28%. Ravens, 32%. Carolina only on the field for 18% of the plays. New Orleans, 27%. And then Green Bay, 22%. So this is not just last week. It is finally kind of getting the attention it deserves this week. But this goes back to week four. They have not really been playing Tariq Cohen.
I get that defenses have... He's no longer the surprise that the Bears had early in the season. One game of that, and he was no longer the surprise. Teams focused on him. The Packers used Demarius Randall, defensive back, to cover him. So I think that's a fact. Two, I think Tariq Cohen's decision-making as a runner was a factor. He started dancing too much. So you started to lose him as a factor there.
That's when they stopped handing him the ball.
Yes, yes, stretch runs and stuff like that. All that said, he is still a very dynamic, explosive player. You've called him your best playmaker.
Yeah.
Find different ways to get him the ball.
And they said...
Where the heck is a screen play?
Right.
You could put Howard and him on the field. You could run a screen play.
And John Fox ended that by pointing out, well, I'll remind you, he leads the team in receptions with 29. As if that's
damning.
Exactly. And this is how I put it in my column. What's worse, that a player who barely plays leads the team in catches, or that the player who leads the team in catches barely plays? I mean,
that.
And he has 29. That puts him 79th in the NFL. 29. It's week 11. That's not a lot of catches. So, one, that doesn't prove anything. And two, that's a problem that guy who barely plays leads your team in receptions. So to use that as
it proves your offense kind of sucks.
It doesn't prove anything. It's ridiculous. And he brought that up like at least three times yesterday. And I'll remind you, Matt Forte once led the Bears in catches. With 102, he set an NFL record for running backs. And by the way, part of that was because that offense had plenty of problems. That was not a good thing that
he remember when he set the record? Cutler, every pass. Check down. Yeah. Check down. Check down. Jay, did you try to get my Forte the record? I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, we keep going back to games in Minnesota.
That was Tressman. That was Tressman's last year. All right, let's continue here with the Fox.
John, you mentioned again today about defenses taking Tariq away. What can he do specifically when that happens to try and...
Well, I think what happens is when you put both he and Jordan in the game, they treat him like a wideout. It's not, you know, that surprising, but, you know, so they treat him as a wideout, and he's been in those roles to get receptions. And I think, you know, if you just looked at the tape, you see he is that explosive guy that everybody's alluded to, including Dow. But at this stage, you know, when you put him in as wideout and they're going to double him on the first third down, last week, you know, that was where Kendall Wright was singled up, and he got a third down reception for a first down when they doubled Tariq over to the other side. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, how we use him. If we can leave him in the backfield more, that's a little bit harder to do.
I'm going to lose my mind.
Do it.
That is an argument for playing him. He commands double teams. And this is the second time. Fox brought this up on Monday. And I pointed it out on Twitter then. How you're bringing that up as a reason not to play him is just, it's crazy. You have a player that was actually commanding double teams, and you didn't put him out there. That is a reason to play him. And then you just gave an example of how he got Kendall right open. That was the second play of the game. All right.
After a negative run.
And you'll hear in some of this, this is going to come back. Actually, I'm going to save this for later because Dow brings this up too. But this is just crazy. So I had to follow up because it just doesn't make sense.
Because he's not playing wide receiver.
John, you mentioned a couple times over the last couple days how Tariq's commanding extra attention when he's at wide receiver. Wouldn't that be a reason to have him on the field more then?
Well, I think, again, you know, you've got guys like Inman getting in. You know, there's only one ball. And, you know, I think our guys understand it, a little bit how the game went last week. I think last week is kind of, you know, when you isolate on just that one, I think he's had plenty of touches. And like I said, he is our leading receiver with 29 catches on our team.
He hasn't had plenty of touches. Go ahead. Go
ahead. I mean, he just, that was like the trifecta. Okay, one, it has nothing to do with Inman. All right, it has nothing to do with the ball. He kept steering back to the touches. I'm not talking about touches. I'm talking about him being on the field, just the snap counts. You have a player commanding double teams, all right? Use that to your advantage to get other players open. And I asked him that, and he just goes right back to the touches and the 29 catches he has. Whoop-de-freaking-do, he has 29 catches. It's November 16th, all right? That's not a lot of catches. It's crazy.
He should have about 15 touches per game.
You would think he's your most explosive player, mm-hmm. as you just heard John Fox point out himself.
Scheme him open, find different ways to create mismatches. It's bizarre.
All right.
It's bizarre.
So Fox addresses all this, and then Dow Loggins comes into the room, and the questioning continued.
What do you need to see from Tariq going forward, nuances and details, to get him more responsibility in 2 minutes and ultimately more playing time in all sets?
Yeah, you know, the second play of the game, they came out, they doubled him, which is the first time in 3 years I've been here they doubled anyone. And I, you know, obviously Kendall benefited from it. The 25-yard the run that Jordan had was we were on a fake ghost with him, and they're doubling him. So they run two guys across with him. The challenge for us right now with Tariq is he's a really good player. Sometimes the defense dictates who's going to be out there.
Okay. There was a lot more to that answer. But that needs to be stopped right there.
You just want
to
go.
Because... Once again, everything said at the beginning is a reason to play him more, and he's talking about how Tariq's presence on the field was helping them, and then they only played him 13 of the 60 snaps. All right? And then at the end, he says the defense dictates who's on the field. And credit David Hall from the Chicago Tribune, because he asked the best possible follow-up question to Dow Loggins saying that.
Saying that, you said that sometimes the defense dictates who's going to be out there. Somebody hearing that, why wouldn't the offense dictate who the defense is going to play?
Well, because we look at the matchups of, okay, they have a dime 32 package, and you know, there's not, each week we may not feel great about Tariq and protects versus Clay Matthews, or there may be a certain blitz that they run that, you know, this game is about matchups for us as well as them, and so that's the first thing we look at when we decide who's going to be the game. Obviously, we felt like Tariq and Bellamy, we talked about that, some of the speed elements that did stretch in the passing game, and you know, he did help in the passing game because those are the best production we've had in the passing game, and he was a part of that because he opened some other guys up because they were doubling him.
So why
some other guys up?
Wasn't he on the field?
You're asking me?
I don't know. I don't know who else to ask.
I
went through two long press conferences yesterday. I don't know who else I can ask.
I'm reaching the conclusion that I generally believe that Loggins, and you know what, probably more so Fox, is afraid to let his rookies play. Does that make sense?
So we got Joel Quenneville in Lake Forest now?
Yeah, probably. No, seriously, think about it. I mean, when Mitch Trubisky has seven passes against a team.
Yeah.
I mean, they are scared at what these rookies can and cannot do. And it's Fox. To me, it's Fox. I know Loggins is part of this. He needs to scheme things better. He really does. Needs to be more diverse in his game plans. But John Fox, again, he signs off on all this stuff. Well, he comes in with these overarching premises. And okay, go ahead.
Well, I get what he's saying there. I mean, yes, you do. Every offensive coordinator is going to go to win a game with certain personnel groupings to limit what a defense does against them.
Yes.
Okay, there's always some of that. But if you're really letting the defense dictate all your personnel, that's a problem. I mean, the offense...
Well, doesn't the offense sub first?
The offense has the ball. You yeah. control the tempo. You can prevent... you can go as far as just preventing them from even substituting by going no huddle. Okay, then they can't substitute, or you can slow it down. You're in control of the ball, and once they make their there's how every play works. For those that don't know, the offense puts their personnel on the field, and there's somebody in the press box for the defense upstairs that's identifying the personnel, and they'll call it down 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends. All right. 11 personnel, one back, one tight end. That means three wide receivers is on the field. The number always adds up to 5, all right? And that immediately, defense coordinator hears that because someone's in charge of identifying the personnel. Defensive coordinator hears that, comes up with the counter defense to go up to match up, all right? Then that's the substitutions. Guess what? The offense still has the ball. They're in charge of when the ball gets snapped. They can then check at the line of scrimmage. You should always be in control. And if you're not, you're not doing your job.
It goes back to my theory that the Bears... wonder if you watch how their games play out, and I know I brought up the Panthers game. It's probably an outlier because of just how wacky it was. But there is... it doesn't make sense what they do from week to week to week. What are they building on? Things change so drastically from their own personnel that you... like, what is going on when Josh Bellamy goes from 14 snaps over 4 weeks to 40?
It tells me they're guessing.
Right? I get that you're injecting Dontrell Inman and Marcus Wheaton into your lineup, but Wheaton played 2 snaps.
Yeah.
Why is he active if he's only playing 2 snaps? I get that Tanner Gentry hasn't done much as a receiver, but he went from playing like 99% of your snaps to being on the practice squad.
The explanation for Bellamy playing was that they wanted speed. And Bellamy is fast. And you know what? If you watch the tape, he does do a decent job of getting open because he is fast. But he has bad hands, and he has a small catch radius. And you saw a couple times in that game that it was hard for Mitch Trubisky to put the ball in his catch radius because he's really easy to play zone defense against. You play zone defense against him, and it limits the area that you can actually get him the ball. When they went man, when they put Devon House on him and he did a tiny little double move, which, by the way, wasn't that great of a double move, but he used his speed to run right by him. And that was a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Mitch Trubisky put the ball there. That's not how you play Josh Bellamy. That was on the Packers. But you sit there in a zone and you saw it at the end of the game, and Dow Loggins actually brought this up. It's not in here, but he did bring it up in his press conference when he was talking about Bellamy. Late in the game, on second down, on that last drive where the game ended, the turkey hole Gruden brought up. Dow Loggins actually referenced the turkey hole. He calls it the honey hole. But they're sitting in cover two. There was a hole between 3 defensive backs, and Mitch Trubisky put the ball right where it's supposed to be. If you watch the coach's tape, the ball hits the ground right in the middle of the turkey hole. Guess who's not in the turkey hole? Josh Bellamy, because he ran a bad route, and Dow Loggins even said he did. So, great, he can run.
Well,
he can't play wide receiver.
To me, all right, whatever they said about speed, he also called him a blocker. That's why Tanner Gentry played so much, because in those games he was their best receiving blocker. Same thing with Bellamy. Inman, not much. Did you see him in the Shaheen rumbling 31-yarder?
That could have been a lot more than what it was had he blocked.
Yes. So they still want to have an emphasis on the run. That's why they still want to march out these receivers who are better blockers than actual receivers. It all goes back to me, though, is there seems to be a mindset that these rookies aren't ready for much. You start talking to people in that locker room, though, those receivers think Mitch Trubisky's ready for more.
Yeah.
I'm sure the running backs would say that Tariq Cohen can handle a bit more. And how else are you going to find out? By, you have to let them play. That's how you find out.
Well, here's where I think Dow Loggins may have hit on the real reason why Cohen snaps are limited. This conversation continued as he was asked how Tariq Cohen's snap counts sit with him.
So, Dow, when you see that Tariq was on the field for 13 plays, and you guys, that came out to something like 22%.
Yeah.
How does that percentage sit with you overall? Like, understanding what goes into it, but only 13 snaps.
But it's hard not to get impatient and say, hey, look, we got to get him on the field more. We got to find different ways to get him the ball. And the thing with him is it's kind of a – it's unique because we have a rookie quarterback, and then Tariq is a – everyone plays – Tariq draws as many different looks and different coverages as Mitchell does. You know, and people try to dictate and hide coverage to Mitchell. Well, every time Tariq's in a game, like, you don't know what you're going to get. New Orleans had to set their own separate package for him. Green Bay played him a completely different way than they played the rest of the time. So sometimes it's number one, you go in anticipating one thing, and when they do something they've never done before, now it's making sure those two young players get on the same page. So it's sometimes you got to figure out what they're doing and how they're trying to dictate the game, and they're playing different personnel groupings to it.
Go for it. I know you've been waiting for this one.
Well, it basically admitted that when Cohen's on the field, defenses are playing different than what they've shown on tape, than what the Bears have prepared for during the week. And instead of making an in-game adjustment with Mitch Trubisky, their solution is to just take Cohen off the field so that they play what they showed on tape. That's playing scared. That speaks to what you just brought up with the rookies. They're afraid to let the rookies just play. Look, you're going to make mistakes. There's going to be some turnovers here and there with Mitch Trubisky. And again, I don't get it, because the second play of the game, and this is something that both Fox and Loggins reference, the second play of the game, they bring double coverage over to Cohen. And how did Trubisky handle it? He hit Kendall Wright for a first down. He read it correctly.
Yeah.
So let him read. Let him play. Let him go through this and just play the game.
Let him throw.
Now I sound like Herm Edwards.
You play the game. Let him throw. Let him throw. Let him throw. I can't stress that enough. This overemphasis on running the ball, that's what I wrote about today, it's almost deterring Mitch Trubisky's growth.
Well, they're not running it well, as you've pointed out.
It's so overrated, their run game.
Yeah.
As Fox said, you know, when he starts calling guys, when John Fox starts referencing stats, he is on the defensive. He's trying to prove a point, trying to make you sound wrong. You know, Jordan Howard's a fifth leading rusher. That is so misleading. Sure, he is in the top five, whatever. You're not a winning football team.
It's like Cohen. When he says Cohen leads the team with 29 catches. Yes. It doesn't mean anything.
He better be in the top 10 if you're running the ball that much. Because if you're not, you've got serious problems.
Yeah. And Loggins brought up how when John Fox's Panthers had two 1,000 yard rushers in 2009, it was the first time that had been done since 1970. It was a great running attack for the Panthers. And he brought up, Dow Loggins brought this up, how that year, the Panthers also led the league in negative runs. Because if you're going to run it that much, you're going to have negative runs. Okay, well, the Bears don't have two 1,000-yard rushers.
Let me tell you about that team, too. Can I give you little details on that 2009 Panthers
team? Sure.
They went 8-8. Jake Delhomme was not a rookie. He was in his seventh season with that team. Threw 18 interceptions and 11 starts. You know where the receivers were? It wasn't a Dontrell Inman. It wasn't a Josh Bellamy. It's Steve Smith and Musin Muhammad.
Yeah.
Totally different teams, totally different situations. Bad example, John. I know Loggins gave the example, but you know Foxy's talking about that, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the amazing thing is so much of that stuff yesterday was scripted. They knew those questions were coming. The PR staff gives them what's going, you know, what we're going to ask. And those were the answers they came up with. To me, that just shows you they don't have answers. That they're scrambling to right now. They're trying to figure it out. And I will still give them a little bit of a break. The personnel's not great. And Loggins did kind of hint at that at different points yesterday. Let's see if I have the quote here. I don't have the sound.
Oh, there was a couple veiled shots at the personnel, which to me could be, you know, translated as veiled shots as a certain other member of the front office. Can it not?
The GM?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the GM's done a lot of good things, but he screwed up with the wide receivers this year. There's no question. He did not give Dow Loggins enough help. But guess what? That help is not coming, all right? They made the trade for Dontrell Inman, and Inman played pretty good. He had that bad drop at the end, but he seemed to have some chemistry with Trubisky, and so you got to use that now. And here's what I thought was a fair quote from Loggins. He said, "I think the biggest thing, to be honest, that can help Tariq is that other guys start stepping up and start playing well around him and become more reliable receivers, where maybe some of the ball distribution improves and the attention goes away from him a little bit." I agree with that from the standpoint of actually getting him the ball. But to me, there's still no excuse for that guy not being on the field.
Right.
He has to be on the field.
You if put he's your best players in the field, yeah.
And if he's, unfortunately, it results in the defenses playing him a certain way that Trubisky has to read some different things. Well, guess what? That's the NFL.
Right, right.
All right? Every team comes out with something that's not on tape every single week, and it's your job as the offensive coordinator to help him on the sideline, make adjustments, and that's another thing. I don't see adjustments. I don't see adjustments throughout the game.
The best players must play, and we keep talking about Mitch Trubisky's learning curve. Tariq Cohen has one, too. Let him learn to face double teams. Put him in different spots. Put him in motion a lot. Put him in bunch formations so he could run rub routes and all sorts of things to give him an advantage. Let him see different things. Let him see different routes. Let him learn, too.
And they brought up some things he needs to do better. He's not in the two-minute package right now because he's not a great pass protector. All right? Now, I'll point out that Benny Cunningham, one of those sacks the other day was on him, but he's pretty good. I understand why he's the third down back. And Loggins also brought up how Tariq Cohen, it seems like every week there's some problem with one route he runs. So he needs to learn,
too. He's also run some very electric routes.
Yes.
Look at the 70-yarder. Watch the details of that route.
So I think there's a lot of truth to what you brought up, that they're kind of afraid to play these rookies right now and let them go through the growing pains.
And here's the thing. They can't be anymore. Their jobs are on the line.
And those are the players you have.
Yes.
Those are your best players.
Yes. Yes.
You have
yes.
to play them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to let them learn. All right. Whew.
Feel better? It's kind of therapeutic.
A little bit.
No?
Should we address the Marcus Wheaton thing, too? Because we talked to Marcus yesterday. A lot of people were wondering why he didn't play. You brought it up a little while ago. I think it's pretty obvious that Marcus Wheaton's in the doghouse. And if we've learned anything over the last 3 years, it said John Fox does not have a lot of patience for guys with nagging injuries.
Mm-hmm.
He says there's owies, and then there's legitimate injuries.
The guy tore a part of his groin.
I know.
I get that he had a broken finger, he had an appendectomy. I thought he just wasn't healthy. But you're right. The availability.
Here's what Fox said yesterday. It's a little bit like Dontrell Inman. You can't just throw people out there the minute they walk in the building. You know, there's a process to learning new language. You have to be able to communicate that language. And so in Wheaton's case, he kind of knows the language. He just hasn't been out there very much. So now it's just kind of getting reacclimated back into football shape, back into game-ready shape. Well, those are two different things.
He has a problem with the playbook. That's a major issue.
Right?
What the heck is going on with the coaching staff?
And what does that have to do with Inman? Inman's been on the team for less than 3 weeks, or 3 weeks now, and one of those was a bye week.
Yeah.
When for half of that week, you weren't even there. You weren't even in the building. So, and he played 57 of 60 snaps.
Looked pretty good.
So what does that have to do? I don't. Now, if he's not in game shape, then that's different. But for what it's worth, Wheaton said, it was extremely frustrating, but I am coming off an injury, so I just have to keep pushing, man. Keep getting healthy. Show them that I am healthy, and I'm sure that it will change. I think I'm ready to play. Absolutely. I think I'm ready to play. So we'll see this week. And then I asked him about what Fox said Monday about him not practicing at full speed. And his response was, I think I had a great day today.
Ooh.
So there's a little bit of frustration there. And I get it, but
a lot of money spent on him.
I'm also not sure that he's a difference maker, even if he does play. All right, should we move on? Bears do have a game this week.
No.
I feel like I'm way behind in preparing for it because there's just been so much emphasis on trying to figure out what happened Sunday.
But it's still part of the preparation. Tariq Cohen still needs to play more against the Lions.
Yes, he does. He does. All right, let's get to our favorite segment, which includes a cameo from our favorite guy, Mark Potash.
What does the fox say?
How about the 11 penalties in the first half? You know, is that a red flag at all to you at this point of the season?
Well, I think the official penalties are 8-5, and that's what goes in the record book, and that's real, and that's in the history book.
What the fox say?
You know, he could still pull the game book, and they're literally in there. They may not be listed in the final statistics, but you can find them in the play-by-play. They're there in the history book.
They committed two penalties on one play
yeah.
that the Packers declined both of them.
Yeah.
because they ran backwards on the play. It was one of the negative runs.
Yeah.
So Fox is pretending like those didn't count.
Yes.
They don't go in the history books. So it didn't happen.
But they are in the books. They're quite literally in the stat package. I know they're not listed in the final stats. But hey, they're in the play.
If John Fox hadn't challenged the touchdown, the fumble never would have been in the history books. But yes. Now it's in the history books.
Yep. It's part of his history.
It's history.
Man. That is, again, when he starts referencing stats and starts using numbers, he doesn't use, remember, he's not a math major.
Yeah.
You know he's getting on his defensive. He's going to start trying to change the narrative to help his cause. And right now, I don't think there's any numbers whatsoever he can use to do that.
Which brings us to this game, which I'm sorry. This is I think this is as big as last week's was. Well, because they lost it, now this week becomes that much more important. It might already be a lost cause. I don't know. But you got the Eagles next week on the road. All right, that's the one game left on the schedule that looks, from this standpoint, impossible to win. So if you lose this week against the Lions, then you lose to the Eagles, you're on a four-game losing streak. And that puts them at 3-8.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, you're starting to go down the road of, all right, what's the draft positioning?
Yep, here we go again.
So this is a big game this week. It's the Lions at the Bears. The Bears are back to being an underdog. Probably where they should be. 3-point underdog, which at home kind of makes it an even type of game, which I think is correct. I mean, there's a little bit of an overreaction to just what happened Sunday. The Bears are...
No, there isn't. Come on. They lost to Brett Hundley.
I understand. But look, you look at the bulk of the season, they're better than what they showed Sunday.
Defensively,
yes. But we don't know what Danny Trevathan's status is, and they clearly missed him.
Mm-hmm.
So if he doesn't play Sunday, I'm not sure it's going to be any better. So it's a noon game Sunday on Fox. And my big question is just how the Bears bounce back. This is the first time that I really feel like there's some doubt that's starting to just creep in. I should have had Kyle Long's comments prepared. But Kyle Long spoke to the media yesterday. And he pointed out how he's never been on a winning team. Which I think he's brought that up before.
Yes.
It just seemed like there's sort of this, when you lose a game like you do Sunday to a rival that you were supposed to beat, and the one thing I always go back to, when the fans see the coaching mistakes, the media sees the coaching mistakes, it's not like the players just inherently trust the coaches and they go, oh, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah,
they're usually the ones that are most upset about it.
Yep.
And I go back to Marcus Wheaton. You think Marcus Wheaton's not, happy about playing two snaps? As much as I'm sitting there in the press box tweeting out, Josh Bellamy's playing? What do you think's going through Marcus Wheaton's head during that?
Right.
You know what I mean? So there's just a little bit of doubt that I sense creeping in, and I think this is important times at Hallis Hall. I think this is an important game for John Fox because you lose this one, you lose next week to the Eagles. You start talking about, is the locker room lost?
Yeah. Well, I don't go to the Hallis Hall on Monday. Everybody in the media corps knows that. I spend all day kind of watching film, thinking up thoughts and stuff like that, and kind of writing all day.
You don't really go on Wednesday and Thursday either.
No, I don't.
Or Friday.
No. I wish it was like that. Be there today. But when they march out the day after the Packers lost, Adam Shaheen... And Nick Kwiatkowski, what does that tell you about the state of the locker room?
It was supposed to be Josh Bellamy, by the way.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden Adam Shaheen came in.
Where is the veteran leadership? Like, where is the ownership? Why is a rookie and a second-year linebacker who just played for the first time since week two addressing the state of affairs after a Packers loss? Go to the locker room on Wednesday.
Wait, real quick, on Monday.
Yep.
That linebacker who wasn't trusted to play the majority of the snaps and be the one relaying the defensive signals.
Yep.
Who outplayed Christian Jones, who had those responsibilities inexplicably. I still go back to that. I don't understand it.
Yep.
to me, that was like an admission that the wrong guy had the responsibilities.
Oh, that he was taking.
Because Kwiatkowski played great.
Yeah, he did.
You mentioned in the postgame how you thought he played pretty well. I went back and watched tape. I thought he played outstanding.
Yep.
But he only played half the snaps that Christian Jones did. Anyway, continue.
So my biggest question is, right, where's this? It's kind of off your question. Where's this locker room at? So like Wednesday, we're in there and Kyle Long talks. Key Mix comes through. Danny Trevathan walks through. It's a good sign. Pernell McPhee walks through, your veterans. It's an empty place. It's like going back to the Lovey days, the end of the Lovey time. It's like the Tressman time where the only time you'd have interaction in the locker room was when Brandon Marshall's yelling at you. I'm not going to answer any of your negative questions.
I have plenty of experience
with
that.
You know, like there's no bunkered down t-shirts being passed around Halas Hall right now, but it's this is where Fox's grip on the team becomes so important. They're a 3-16. They just lost to Brett Hundley. I want to see what type of response they have against the Lions and beyond, because I don't think they're going to be favored in all but maybe two games the rest of the season, as the 49ers and the Browns.
Well, I brought this up last week, kind of in passing, but we all kind of came into this. We're sitting there in a bye week going, all right, the schedule's a lot easier. 4-4 should be the minimum goal. 5-3 is not out of the question. And I brought up how last year you and I sort of had a similar conversation at the bye week, and it just went the complete opposite direction.
Yes.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, this could end up going that way. And if that ends up being the case, I don't know how you can keep the coaching staff.
See, like, here's the thing about the defense, too. Everybody loves Vic Fangio. But last year, the wheels fell off on the defense. Great numbers statistically. They were great statistically. Yeah. They are great statistically. Will the wheels fall off again? When the wheels fall off in the defense and the offense is playing like this, what do you have?
I said
but another 3-13 football team.
Yep, and I said the same thing about Kyle Fuller in the bye week. Great first half. Let's see him play a whole season. You know, before everyone starts throwing a contract extension at this dude, let's see how he plays.
People keep,
he didn't play well.
Were people on your case? It's only one game. With all due respect to Kyle Fuller, he was good in the first half of the season, but he just no interceptions.
No.
No.
He actually wasn't great. He had two good games, pretty good games. The rest of the time, he was just fine. And they're still picking on him a lot.
Brett Hundley picked on him, by the way.
Yeah.
Brett Hundley. Not Aaron Rodgers. Brett Hundley. Brett Hundley. Brett Hundley. We can't say his name enough.
It's bad. All right. Let's get to our bold predictions.
Bold predictions.
I think with all the heat and questioning...
Tariq Cohen's 40 touches.
No, I just said I'm going to...
Eight.
He plays 20 snaps. 20.
That is bold. I guess it is. You're right.
Should I make it a percentage? That might be fair.
Okay, go ahead.
Let me look at... Because 20... He hasn't played 20 since Baltimore.
A long time ago. He had a lot of negative runs in that game.
So in Baltimore, he played 32% of the snaps. How about that? I'll make my bold prediction that he plays 32% of the snaps.
Okay. I like it. I'm going to go out and say, since I wrote about it today, that the Bears will not have a negative run. I think that's super bold.
Yeah, I don't think that's even realistic.
Mm-hmm. They've had a game where they've had like two or three.
Kyle Long's still limited. I'm not sure he's playing.
Yeah.
And Hronis Grisu was not good.
Okay, fine. They only have two negative runs.
I mean, this is a bold prediction, not impossible prediction.
Fair. True. Okay, fine. Two negative runs, that's it.
Okay.
Not five, not three.
How many did they have the other day?
Five. You know, so they have 45 negative runs on the year. And if you add in like 1 yard runs and stuff like that, the number is over like 60.
Yeah.
It's not good. They're an overrated running team.
All right, so two. No more than two. That's your
more than two.
I think that's fair.
Predictions.
All right, so the Lions' defense is actually not that good. They've had some high-scoring games.
Hey, but they stopped Brett Hundley.
Brett Hundley actually, didn't they still score 24 points in that game or something?
There's a lot of garbage
stuff. I understand. So I think the Bears get in the end zone twice, which...
You seem so confident. You should see this guy's face.
You're
like grimacing.
You'd hope they'd
be able touchdowns?
Hope they'd be able to against the Lions. I got to say, though, the defense concerned me.
Yes,
it did. The lack of discipline, guys out of their gaps. It was
like of a pass rush.
It was weird. Like I think they missed Danny Trevathan in more ways than just him not being on the field. So I think there'll be some correction. The Lions have a pretty good offense right now.
Yeah,
I think there'll be some correction. So I don't think the Lions go off. But I find it hard. I don't know. I can't pick the Bears to win this game. Just looking at this right now, so I got Lions 20, Bears 17.
Lions don't run the ball very well either. Amir Abdullah, your guy. No, he's a Nebraska guy, right?
He was a Nebraska, yeah. Well, the Packers had Joe Williams out there, whoever that was. That wasn't Joe Williams. What's his name?
Jamal Williams.
Jamal Williams.
Yeah. Fourth-round pick.
They had two running backs get hurt again, and then that guy was just running over Leonard Floyd in the fourth quarter.
No, and that play ran over Leonard Floyd and Cal Fuller.
Yeah.
Two first-round picks meet this fourth-round pick for the Packers.
Yeah.
I think the defense can be better. They should be better. Stafford's got some magic to him, I think. I've been guilty of maybe underrating his talents maybe the past couple of years.
Well, he's just inconsistent.
Yeah, he's got good receivers. That's the Lions, though. They define inconsistency. Still have more talent than the Bears. They have some playmakers on defense. I know it's not a great unit overall, but they can make plays. They got a lot of takeaways, I think, actually.
Well, secondary is pretty good.
Yeah. Gosh, you're right. I think actually they'll allow Trubisky to throw a bit more in this game, but I can't see him mustering more than 17 points. So give me 24-17 Lions.
24-17. All right. Joe, let's bring in Joe Romano. Joe, what do you got here?
What's up, boys?
50-0 Lions.
No. I don't really have a great reason for this, but I'm picking the Bears to win 17-14.
Wow.
Yeah, I think the defense steps up after being not embarrassed, but like Johnsy's been saying, that was Brett Hundley out there, and he had, you know, that the big pass in the fourth quarter, you know, both of those to Adams.
Insane enough.
And there's just you look at the Lions' schedule. They have a big game on Thursday, Thanksgiving coming around. This could be a little bit of a sandwich game where the Lions are looking ahead to that division title and the Vikings being the real competition there. I think the Bears sneak up and get them 17-14.
All right, little look ahead there. So remember this from Kyle Long.
Adam Jones.
I want him to yell out Joe Romano. As he goes in the locker room.
Joe.
There we go.
If the Bears actually win.
My man.
I think wasn't Kyle inactive for that game?
Which game was that again?
I don't know. That was like a long time ago.
I don't remember.
It was Minnesota. We keep going back to Minnesota. I know the Vikings were the matchup that day.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. Well, speaking of Minnesota, we can do their game first. I had the Packers down first, but we can segue straight to the Vikings. This is a huge game. How about the Los Angeles Rams, 7-2, Vikings 7-2. This game in Minnesota, noon Sunday on Fox. The Vikings are 2.5-point favorite.
Do you think Jared Goff will get the best of Harrison Smith and company?
Jared Goff.
Double A gap blitzing. Jared Goff is good. His receivers are good.
He's great.
His running game is good.
But this is the revenge game for Case Keenum. How about this? Jared Goff and Case Keenum going up against each other. Who would have thought that?
Case Keenum has been all right.
He's been great.
For Case Keenum, you're right. He's having an all-pro level season for a Case Keenum-like season, if that makes sense. He's been good. I like the Vikings this one. I feel like the Rams are due for a couple stinkers. Is that wrong in saying that?
No, like, I get it. Like, they're not all the way there.
Yeah. He's still a second-year quarterback. He's still a first-year head coach. You still have young players playing. There's got to be a couple hiccups. And this seems like a perfect situation where the Vikings can give them that hiccup.
Yeah, and this is a tough environment for Jared Goff to go into. The Vikings have now won 5 games in a row. And it's like every week you're kind of like, should I doubt them? I mean, this Case Keenum thing.
I get it. Yeah, yeah.
But their defense at home, I'm going to take the Vikings. Joe?
I don't love how many points the Vikings gave up to the Redskins last week. The final score was 38-30. And Jared Goff, man, the last 2 weeks, 660 passing yards, 7 touchdowns, no picks. This is a show-me game. I don't think he shows up. I think the Vikings take care of business at home.
Did you just rip the Vikings?
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying I'm surprised.
He kind of set that up as like, I'm taking the Rams, and it's like, I don't think he shows up.
Yeah. Fastball? Nah. I like it. Curveball. Gotcha.
I like it.
Just don't flop it out there and expect to perform like that.
Well, Bears flopped it out there against the Packers on Sunday, and now the Packers go back to Green Bay. They play the Ravens. I'm surprised by this spread. It's noon Sunday on CBS. This tells you that Vegas was not buying what the Packers put out there against the Bears.
What does that tell you about the Bears?
Yeah, I know. The Packers are a 2-point home underdog to the Baltimore Ravens. Noon Sunday on CBS.
I think Brett Hundley's due for a stinker. I thought the stinker was going to happen on Sunday.
Due for a stinker? He's had all stinkers except for Sunday.
But like a real stinker.
Yeah.
Like a 3-turnover game like stinker. The only team to get that out of him was Minnesota when he came in and filled in when Rodgers got hurt. Is this it? I don't know. Give me the Ravens. Just get gut feeling just to make the Packers win over the Bears look worse.
I'm going to say that Hundley got a little confidence here. If this was a tougher opponent, I would probably go against the Packers. But the fact that the Packers are getting points at home, I'm going to take Green Bay.
I took Hundley as a home dog 2 weeks in a row. Fool me twice, shame on me, man. I'm going Ravens here.
Fair enough. I mean, that is kind of good logic from my standpoint. All right, moving on.
I try not to be me in this setting.
All right. I can't believe we're still picking the Dolphins games every week, but I guess we should.
It's Jay Cutler.
What's up, Jay?
Hey, Jay.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
How are you doing?
Pretty good.
The more I hear that bit or soundbite, whatever, I keep picturing Kevin Fishbane with a deeper voice. Yeah. It sounds like him.
With a deeper
voice. What's up, Jay?
So Mike Glennon?
Yes. So Mike Glennon. Yes.
No.
No.
This is an ugly game in the state of Florida. The Buccaneers, 3-6, underachieving. The Dolphins, 4-5, underachieving. Vegas doesn't know what to do with it. They just set this at an even spread. Noon Sunday on Fox.
Well, there's no Winston, right?
That's right. He's out.
Yeah.
Who's playing quarterback for them?
I have no
Fitzpatrick.
Idea.
It's not Fitzpatrick.
Oh,
that's
Fitzmagic.
Right. Not Mike Glennon.
No, not Mike.
See, Glennon should have stayed in Tampa.
Yeah.
He'd be playing right now.
God. Dolphins. There's my analysis. Dolphins. Well, lock it up.
You better lock it up. No, you lock it up. Lock it up.
I don't know, man. The Dolphins are a mess. They've lost 3 games in a row. I still think the Buccaneers are a decent team.
No, that team's going for a straight house cleaning. Cutter's out. Jason Light's going to be out.
I did not think that was happening at the beginning of the year.
You believe it's going to happen now?
What has happened to them? Yeah, they lost 5 in a row. They finally beat the Jets.
But they did spank the Bears.
Yeah. I don't know. Same reasoning as you. Bucks.
You better lock it up. No, you lock it up. Lock it up.
The stinker ball.
Man, 2 locks in this game. Woof.
Well, I just had to do it against Johns to make it entertaining. If we're gonna try to make
I'm going to be really watching this game
now. I mean, it's the worst game in football, so might as well.
Come on, Jay. Stills is open.
And I was going to say that there's no anticipation on this game, and now there's 2 locks on it. Jeez. I have no, like you guys said, I have no analysis. Every time I guess that something's going to happen with Jay, it goes down the toilet. So I guess I'll agree with John's. Dolphins, I don't know. This one's rough.
Yeah. You're going Dolphins. All right. No lock?
No, I'll stay away from the lock on that one.
All right, fair enough.
Hey, Lovey, how you doing?
Hey, Lovey. Hey,
Lovey. Hey, Lovey.
How's everybody doing?
We should just take that laugh and use it for, like, evil situations.
It is an evil laugh. evil laugh. All right, the Philadelphia Eagles at the Cowboys. This is the Sunday night game on NBC, 7:30 kickoff. Cowboys, 4-point home dogs to the Eagles are just playing great. They keep showing up on primetime, too, and playing well. I'm going to keep it riding here on the Eagles.
I agree. Cowboys are kind of a mess right now, and it's not.
And without Zeke,
yeah,
for sure.
Of course, Zeke's completely out, but what the heck is Jerry Jones doing? He's like in the news nonstop. Yeah. Can the owners really take this team away from him?
Isn't that crazy that that's actually a thing?
Is that like the you know, the nuclear option there?
It is.
Like,
it's getting ugly in the NFL right now.
Yeah. All that bickering is all the leaking of information to great guys like us in the media, you know. Yeah, give me the Eagles. The Cowboys seem to be a mess. And that literally absolutely starts at the top.
Mm-hmm.
All the way down.
Well, they have won three in a row, but without Zeke on Sunday, they go into Atlanta and just got trounced.
Yes.
So I'm surprised this spread isn't even higher than it is, which almost has me wondering if I should go the other way. But I'm going to ride with the Eagles here. Joe?
Yeah, that's where I was actually going to lead off. I'm surprised that it's only 4 points. The Eagles are the number one rush defense in all of football, 66 yards a game. That's crazy. I'm going to go with the Eagles, and I'm going to lock that up.
Ooh.
You better lock it up. You better lock it up.
No, you lock it up.
You lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up.
See, that's probably a better logic for locking a game up than what John said.
No, go with your gut.
Yeah.
Bad football. Jake can win that game.
Yeah, I think, well done. It'd be well said.
The Falcons, after their win over the Cowboys, go to Seattle. Dan Quinn back in Seattle. Mm-hmm. 2.5-point favorites. The Seahawks are at home. Monday night game, 7:30 on ESPN.
I like the Seahawks. I think Kyle Shanahan is missed in Atlanta. I think they are completely feeling the effects of the Super Bowl still. And I think they got a lot of questions as a team overall that Dan Quinn needs answered. And I think the Pete Carroll Seahawks are going to stick it to him.
For some reason, I just have a feeling that the Falcons maybe got some confidence here, and they're going to play really, really well in Seattle.
For their coach, one of those situations.
Yeah. I think the Seahawks win this game, but only by 1 point. So with the 2.5, I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go with the Falcons here.
This game would be so much better with everybody healthy. Richard Sherman's out. I'm not sure exactly the status of Earl Thomas and Devonta Freeman, but I assume that they're both going to be out. This is another tough game. I like the Falcons coming off that win against the Cowboys. I think they got their confidence back. I think whether you give them the points or not, I think they win this game straight up, so I'll take the Falcons.
Oh, wow. I like it. All right, let's move on to college picks. It's an ugly slate. We'll speed right through them. So when I found out on Sunday night that College Game Day was going to Madison, Wisconsin, my alma mater, I was like, what? It never even crossed my mind that would be a possibility.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I hadn't really looked at what the whole schedule was this week, but indeed, number 24 in Michigan going to number 5 Wisconsin is by far the best game of the week and exactly where Game Day should be. It's a little weird, but that's where they are. And this is the biggest game of the week. It is Joe's Wolverines and my Badgers.
Let's go, baby.
All right, Joe, why don't you go first? I just want to hear your perspective on this game.
You know, the Michigan's played better since the redshirt freshman Brandon Peters stepped into the lineup. The passing game isn't great. It's been leaning mostly on the running game. But they're still not. They haven't played anybody good. He came into the game against Rutgers and then started against Minnesota and Maryland. So he's played in three games against three of the worst teams in college football. So a 7.5-point spread is not something I feel comfortable with at Camp Randall. Wisconsin's up to number 5 now in the playoff rankings. It's all right in front of them. You know, I think if they can win out, mm-hmm. it's right there for them to take. I hate to do it, but I think Wisconsin covers the spread in Madison. But to be honest, I'm really happy it's an 11 o'clock game. If it was a night game, this would be a rout.
Well, that's why this sucks that this is 11. It's the best game of the week. Game day's there, and I just know from some people this doesn't really matter, but talking to some people at Madison, like, they have a conundrum because game day's on Bascom Hill, which is nowhere near Camp Randall, and they want people there so it looks good on TV, but they also want people in their seats, not just at 11, but at 10:50 for senior day.
Yes.
So one of the two is not...
Why can't they make the location closer? Do they always do it there?
They've done it at both. One time they did it in the stadium, but you can't really do it in the stadium when the game's kicking off right away.
Yeah, yeah. You want to see the kids with the signs and all that stuff.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think there's going to be some... You follow them a lot closer than I do. Undefeated team, two one-loss teams ahead of them in the rankings right now. I would imagine that's bulletin board material. I imagine that's a coach's message. I imagine winning out is becoming part of their mantra right now. I like where the Badgers are at. I don't think the Wolverines are very good. I think Jim Harbaugh has been an overrated college coach. Gimme the Badgers.
Yeah, I was more worried about the game last week against Iowa. As you guys heard, I picked the Hawkeyes to win.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw...
Someone called you out on Twitter about that. They wanted like an apology. Did you write him a statement?
I did not. I don't think I need to apologize for predictions. But that was kind of a proven game to me. I was impressed. I came away from that game impressed, especially because Iowa had 14 points and they were both thrown by Alex Hornibrook, the Wisconsin quarterback. If you would have told me going in that Wisconsin would have two pick sixes, I would have said Iowa's definitely winning.
Yeah.
Instead, Wisconsin won 38-14. You know, that's the thing. Their offense has quietly been pretty good, even though they have some quarterback problems. I don't really, you know, Joe, you brought it up. Michigan's really played nobody the last few weeks. And even with that, they haven't really put much up through the air anyway, even with this redshirt freshman quarterback. So, I think that Wisconsin takes care of business in this game. I'm not sure they run away with it like they did against Iowa last week, but 7.5, I'm going to go with the Badgers. So it's a sweep.
Yeah, man. Who wants to get tackled?
Minnesota, meanwhile, comes to this area in Evanston at number 23 Northwestern. The Cats are on a roll. They've won 5 games in a row. They are 7.5 point favorites against the Gophers at home, 11 a.m., also 11 a.m. game. This was on Big Ten Network.
You're the sideline reporter. Give us the breakdown. I like the Cats right now.
Yeah, they're playing well. I liked how they kind of just took care of business last week against Purdue. You know, the S&P Plus, I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast last week. I think I did. Actually, had Purdue winning that game straight up.
Yeah.
And it was pretty obvious from the kickoff that Northwestern was the better team. And it seems like the lines adjusted a little bit this week with them actually being 7.5 point favorites. Now, the interesting wrinkle in this game, PJ Fleck came to Evanston last year and left with a victory as the head coach at Western Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
So he has some experience winning in Evanston.
Row the boat.
Cool.
Anyway, give me the Wildcats in this one.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to go with the Cats.
I love where their confidence and heads are at.
Minnesota gave up 400 yards rushing to two Michigan running backs. This is a big day lining up for Justin Jackson. I think the Cats win.
My guy, JJ.
Yeah, I think the Cats win, but I don't think they cover the 7.5 spread. I will take the I'll row the boat on that one.
Ugh, I hate the boat. I hope the boat sinks. How about that?
Oh, damn, dude.
I was a math major. I wasn't, actually, but...
Did you hear Kyle Long like reference that, too? Did he have a quote? Did I read that wrong?
Not about math. He said
he's not a doctor.
He and Fox didn't go to med school.
I got you.
Yeah. Which I didn't know how to interpret that, but whatever. Navy heads to South Bend, number 8, Notre Dame. Notre Dame's a 7.5 point favorite here after getting their butt whooped.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But Miami. So 2:30 starts Saturday on NBC. They're back home, back where they're comfortable. They hadn't played a road game in forever. I think people overlooked that last week. I believe I picked Miami.
Did you? Did I pick the Irish?
I think you did.
You know why? Because Pat Finley, who covered college sports for a long time, my colleague, said that Miami sucked. And I'm like, okay, you've covered college sports longer than I have. I've never covered them. I'll take your word for it.
Didn't he cover college sports on the West Coast?
Yes.
So what does he know about Miami?
Who knows?
He
was wrong.
I'm just kidding, Pat.
He was wrong. You would think the Irish would have some type of response in them against the Service Academy. You would think. Devastating loss for them. title hopes, playoff hopes, gone. We'll see. I actually think Navy keeps this close. I really do. I like them covering.
I do, too. Navy actually just went through kind of a tough stretch, then won a game last week. They're not as good as they usually are, but they've played Notre Dame close
to four.
Yeah.
They've
beat Notre Dame recently. I think this is either going to go one or two ways. Either Notre Dame's going to come back hungry and blow them out, but it's tough to blow out Navy. The way they run the ball and they just keep pounding it on you, I'm gonna take Navy here.
I hate when it's a clean sweep, but there's really no other way to go. I think a good coach can help a team bounce back from a blowout and get the team riled up and get them in front of the home crowd and really take it to their next opponent. This guy is just not a great coach. They win the game, but it's not they don't cover 17.5. No way.
Brian Kelly.
Yeah.
Shot.
Yeah. I like it.
All right, so last week I gave you an extra one, and I was almost hit the money on that one. I told you that Alabama was going to struggle with Mississippi State. I said, I don't know if they'll lose, but it's going to be close. And sure enough, okay, it took two late touchdowns.
So what are we calling this now? The Adam special?
Sure, the Adam special.
The Hulk special.
I'll give you one, but this one's a little bit extreme. All right? The 4-5 Louisiana Monroe, whatever they are, I don't know what they are, go to Auburn. Okay, Auburn just beat number one Georgia by a billion points. Auburn is a 36.5 point favorite in this game.
What's that again?
Auburn is a 36.5 point favorite in
36,
this game.
36.5.
36. Yeah. Okay. All right. This is the ultimate sandwich game. In number one Georgia last week, you play Alabama in the Iron Bowl next week. How are you supposed to get up? I think it's 11 a.m. game down there in Jordan-Hare. I'm not saying they lose. I'm not predicting they lose. I think they win comfortably. I don't think they win by 37 points, though. So, taking Louisiana Monroe on this one.
There you have it, everybody. The Hogue special.
The Warhawks.
The Warhawks.
Go get them.
I mean, think about it. If you're Auburn right now, if you're a player, like, you just beat the number one team in the country. You got Alabama, the biggest game of the year, next week.
Yeah.
Who cares about the Warhawks?
Mm-hmm.
Sleepy. Sleepy game at Jordan-Hare.
And to win by 37.
Watch out. Watch out. All right. We should probably close things out here. This was a heck of a show. I think it was long. I didn't really keep track, but
You're rolling.
We had to get through a lot there with the offense, and I hope you enjoyed it. You can follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. Hey, as we head off to House Hall, it's defense day. They had some issues, too. I got questions for Vic Fangio.
You bringing a fire today?
Should we come back tomorrow and just do this whole thing on the defense?
You get another 10 points coming?
No.
10A, 10B, 10C. You go on and on again about them, too.
No, the defense has been fine. That was a bad game Sunday, but the issues...
I'm telling you, though, the wheels have fallen off before.
Yeah? Got to watch out. Hey, follow our producer, Joe Romano, at Joey Joe Rowe. You should be. And you can read us, WGNRadio.com/Bears, ChicagoSunTimes.com. Search Hogan Johns on iTunes. Please rate and review the podcast. If you like the fire that was spit today, just put it out there. Just say, hey, iTunes, I like this. 5 stars. We appreciate it. Voicemail line, 312-222-5050. Write it down, 312-222-5050. Thanks for all those voicemails on Sunday during Packer game. They were great. They got angry, though.
Good to hear from Fox himself.
Joe had that bleep button going.
Yeah, that thing's broken, dude.
Hey, our podcast in print is back with the Sun-Times, too, this week. Check it out there. We talk about coaching changes. We'll talk to you on Sunday.
Actually, my feet are very ticklish.